Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. June 4, 2020. My new article on LinkedIn: The Four Colors of the Human Rainbow. In 1954, the Supreme Court, under Chief Justice Earl Warren, unanimously revoked the constitutionality of segregation. But court rulings don't change hearts. Deep inside, the hatred that created the segregation is very much alive and fuels the flames of the protests we are seeing. There is no solution to the racial tensions in America, other than to find a way, however unrealistic it may seem, for the parties to love one another, blacks, whites, yellow, and red. Just as the rainbow in the sky marked the covenant between God and Noah, the human rainbow should mark the covenant among all people. America is at a crossroads. Either love will cover everyone, or hate will cover everyone. The future of the country depends on the choice between them. Why is it that we love diversity in nature, but hate it in ourselves? What would happen if zebras wanted to be lions, and lions wanted to be elephants? It is precisely the diversity of nature that gives it its beauty and power. How long would we last if the heart suddenly insisted on being the liver? Existence is based on different elements forming a harmonious, beautiful, and vital ecosystem that needs all of its parts in order to survive. There is no hatred among any of nature's parts. On the contrary, there are mutuality and harmony. Unless America emulates this approach within society, the factions will destroy each other. And today, it is clearer than ever. Harmony seems impossible under the current circumstances. People are too absorbed in their own anger to respect one another. Therefore, respect, consideration, ethics, and so forth, are not viable solutions, since the entrenched hatred will throw them out the window. Instead, the parties must uproot the hatred itself, realize that they cannot exist without each other, and therefore try to learn to love one another, nothing less than that. All people are parts of the same system, the same organism of human society. If you hurt one part, you've hurt all of humanity. If people loved each other, there would not be discrimination, humiliation, suspicion, or violence. But in order to come to it, people realize it's necessary, and choose to work for it. America is at a crossroads. Either love will cover everyone, or hate will cover everyone. The future of the country depends on the choice between them. My thoughts on Twitter, June 4, 2020. The most important thing in the wisdom of Kabbalah is to reveal the Creator, the one who governs me, and how I should accept this governance. Am I under the Creator's complete control, or am I mistaken in that I am? One must annul oneself, calibrate oneself properly to understand who am I and what is the world. The light of the Creator, the light of bestowal, the power of faith, allows us to rise above our ego and see everything not with the ego eyes, when I complain to the Creator, the world, and myself. If I regret what I did and blamed myself, I do not seem to believe in the single upper force besides which there's nothing. The Creator is the result of all my efforts to unite in the Ten. I am constantly looking for this solution, but I keep circling around it, around the center of the Ten, missing it. Because egoism knocks me off of this goal. Only with equal striving toward Israel, Torah, Creator can I get to the center. The center of the Tens does not apply to any of us, but only to all in equal measure. This is the Creator. As if I took 10 paints of different color and began to mix them together until there was not a single predominant color left. The resulting connection is a quality of the Creator. Faith is determined by the discrepancy between what I see and what I have to see. If this world is perfect, because the Creator created it, and there is no one but Him, then I must see it as ideal. But I see many problems in it now. This is the level of knowledge. From Twitter, June 4, 2020. Medium published my new article, What Happens When We Get Diversity and Inclusion All Wrong. Can you mix water and oil? No, you can't. But can you do without either of them? No, you can't. Can a wolf become a moose? No, it can't. Would we want it to? God forbid. So why are we excluding diversity and inclusion when it comes to people? Why are we fighting to make everyone the same when it's exactly the differences between us that make humanity so beautiful, if we work harmoniously with one another? By trying to make everyone the same, we are misinterpreting inclusion and increasing the hatred that already exists within us. Just as men and women are different from each other, so are the four different types of color: white, black, yellow, and red. And just as men and women are complementary, so are the four types of people. Neither is better, neither is worse. They are simply that, four types of people, whose differences manifest, among other things, in skin color. You might ask, but if one is not superior to another, why is there bigotry? Bigotry has nothing to do with skin color, and everything to do with human nature. We are self-centered and alienated from each other. In simple terms, we are hateful creatures. This is not news, of course, it's been known since Genesis 8:21, when God stated, "The inclination of man's heart is evil from his youth." This inclination is the reason that more than half a century after the retraction of segregation in the United States, there is no inclusion. By trying to make everyone the same, we are misinterpreting inclusion and increasing the hatred that already exists within us. Inclusion does not mean that everyone becomes the same. It means that everyone is included in the making of a common society, each according to his or her unique characteristics, and the diversity of unique qualities that are included under one common whole creates a healthy and robust nation. But to do that, people must overcome the evil inclination that rules their hearts. And to overcome that innate nature, we need to know several things. 1. All parts of American society are indispensable. Extract any part of it, and you have handicapped the entire nation. 2. The various factions are indispensable precisely because they are different. What one can do, none other can. 3. The uniqueness of each group must function as a positive contributor to all of society. In this way, the diversity will strengthen the society and increase solidarity, as opposed to being a cause for tension and disintegration in the current situation, when hatred separates the factions. 4. The ultimate goal of all the factions must be the strengthening and solidifying of the entire American society. If even one of the four groups pulls its own way, the entire society will fall to pieces. As an example, think of a basketball team. Each player on the team has a specific role, or roles, to play, and every player helps the other teammates do their part, as well. If the team wins, it is not one player's personal victory, it is the team effort that pulled the feat. In much the same way, today's American society needs its players to play their parts, then help each other, and together accomplish the task of uniting the American nation. The diversity of the American population can create the most beautiful and thriving society on earth, but first people must decide that they prefer to love one another rather than to hate. Choosing to love is not easy, but there is no other way. It is said that necessity is the mother of invention. Today, it is necessary that American society reinvents itself, because it is on the brink of collapse. The coming weeks and months will determine whether America defeats the hatred that has spread throughout the nation and becomes a beacon of help for a fractured world, or gives into the odium and relapses into civil war. Cabinet published my new article, Can America Learn to Love? Over the past week, America has literally been in flames. What began as peaceful protests has catapulted into a war zone. In Manhattan, hundreds of looters ransacked stores, the National Guard was deployed, and dozens of cities declared overnight curfews. Clearly, there is a lot of politics involved, but this doesn't diminish the pain or the scale of the problem. America has already had an Afro-American president, Afro-American governors, Afro-American judges, sports stars, and icons of all sorts. Legally, there are no preventions standing in the way of any person of color to occupy any position. Yet, there is no peace, no peace of mind, and no love. The chasm is not only present, it is ever deepening. Love doesn't mean covering our differences and denying their existence. Love is about cultivating and emphasizing all the subtleties of our uniqueness, but not in order to compete or arouse envy. We should use our differences as building blocks to construct bridges of affection. Differences should never be used to increase pride or conceit. It is written, "Love will cover all crimes," Prof. 10:12. The crime is hatred among people. Yet, hatred is a necessary element. Just as without the night we would not know when it is day, without hate we cannot know when there is love. Because of it, hate enables the existence of love. Moreover, the deeper the darkness of hatred, the brighter the light of love that follows. America is full of hatred. It is built from layers upon layers of hatred. Yet, this is exactly why America has the potential to become a role model, a world leader in rising above differences and hatred. Nature didn't create us different for no reason. There is a special intention here, a purpose. Anyone who ever studied nature's ways knows that no part of it, not even the tiniest iota, is redundant. Nothing should be eradicated or erased from the world, except for pride and separation. So trying to blur one's unique skin color or other physical, mental, or emotional attributes is like saying that nature made a terrible error and it's our job to fix it. There is so much ignorance and hubris in such thinking. We must relate to what nature has created as a given, that we work with progress toward correction, and the correction is in the relationships between us, the only place where there is a flaw. Let's learn what love means and what it can do with our given attributes. Let's learn how it disarms our egos and our foolish pride, how it brings us closer while exposing every bit of our uniqueness, and how it joins our differences into a perfect whole. Everything is burning now in America. It is difficult to hear a delicate message of love beyond the smashing shop windows and glee-filled hollers. Yet, if we do not hear it, the wave will pass and matters will resume an air of normalcy, but the hate will not vanish. It will strike again with even more ferocity because we haven't treated it, we haven't tended to the hatred that is fueling it. Perhaps when we find ourselves embroiled once more in a civil war, the anguish and distress will open our ears and hearts to hear the message. Maybe then we will accept that being different is a blessing when we want to unite in love, and the only curse is the hatred in our hearts. Shavuot, receiving the method of correction. Question: after the Exodus from Egypt, the Torah was received, which represents the special holiday of Shavuot. Receiving the Torah means receiving the upper light with the help of which a person can correct himself and reach the level of the Creator. Why did this happen on Mount Sinai? Answer: Mount Sinai personifies hatred toward our egoism, due to which we can receive the highest light. We received the method for correcting the ego because we hated it as we were standing under Mount Sinai. We saw how much this selfishness is odious to us, how much it is against us. We were literally ready to bury ourselves under this mountain if we did not receive the force of correction. Only after that were we able to enter the land of Israel, in Eretz Yisrael. Eretz is desire, Israel, Israel aim directly to the Creator, Yasharkel. Being in the land of Israel, we built the first and the second temples there, which personify the unification of the whole soul in its leading form, called Israel. And in our time, we must draw to this not only ourselves, but also the whole humanity and reach the third temple. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, January 29, 2019. billions of people in 1:10. Question: can work in 1:10 affect all of humanity? Answer: there is no difference between a small 10 and all of humanity. If we awaken a higher power through our actions in the 10, then through it we influence the whole world. Such is the peculiarity of the integral system that even a 10 contains all parts of reality within itself. If we pump the 10 with higher light, then it expands and so does the size of all of humanity. Imagine that there are 1 billion people in each friend. There are 8 billion people in the world and all of them, except the point of the Creator, Keter, and the point of Malkut, are within this 10. As we move forward, we begin to reveal all of reality within this 10, all of humanity, all the worlds, everything is inside it, you just have to penetrate deeper into it. From the second part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson April 20, 2020, Connecting the World in the Last Generation. It is important to understand what the Torah says. The Torah describes so many different events. Can it all be just in order to achieve love for the created beings, to get closer to other people, and replace your hatred with love? Why is this written in the Torah, in the instruction given to us by the upper force? We do not understand this. In fact, it is unclear how this is possible because experience shows everyone is ready to speak beautiful words, every religion calls for kindness and love, and as a result, the entire history of humanity is accompanied by mutual hatred and wars. This is why it is so important to understand what the Torah says. It describes the only thing that has not happened in history. Baal HaSulam writes that the Torah speaks exclusively about one thing, about love of one's neighbor as oneself, that is, the love of people. You have to love them as if there is nothing else besides this, to love all of humanity and every person. Some people love humanity, but they do not love people. A person should do everything for the sake of love and live in this world only for the sake of it. The only purpose of a person's existence in this world is to bring good to all people. The Torah describes 613 actions of bestowal that a person must perform, and all of them are in regard to other people, relative to one's neighbor. Only then does a person observe the Torah, that is, corrects his soul. Rabbi Akiva, the greatest sage in times of the Second Temple, said that love your neighbor as yourself is a great rule in the Torah. Its entire essence. The Torah is intended for reaching love for people. What should we do in order to receive the Torah? You must want to receive it. After all, why do you need it? To study the Torah means to study how to love your neighbor. Are you ready for this? Do you really want this? Little by little, we begin to understand that the attainment of the greatness of the Creator, His revelation, and reaching love for one's neighbor are one and the same thing. The love of friends and love of people cannot be less than the love of the Creator since one is clothed into the other. This one commandment about loving your neighbor as yourself includes all the commandments, that is, all the corrections that a person must make in his egoistic desire in order to bring him to bestowal, becoming a complete righteous. And within this love for people, he will attain the love for the Creator. Each commandment is a correction of an egoistic desire. There are 613 desires in a person, and all of them are egoistic, and we need to turn them into the bestowing ones. From the third part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson May 27, 2020, Writings of Baal HaSulam, Matan Torah, The Giving of the Torah. To reach the level of man. Question: we see in nature how atoms combine into molecules and molecules into more complex substances. This process of unification we understand. Unified plants can cause rain. Ants organize themselves in colonies, etc. And what about humanity? We look at the inanimate, vegetative, and animate nature, but we cannot see an example of how our society should be built. We cannot do it. Answer: why not? How is man different from inanimate, vegetative, and animate nature? by the fact is that he has free will. It can act as an integral part of nature or it can act contrary to it. Comment: but ants interact with each other instinctively. My response: and we must act not instinctively but consciously. I must consciously restrict my selfish impulses so as not to harm nature, not to go beyond the framework of its integral picture. Question: does humanity have any special role? Answer: yes. When we build ourselves in the likeness of nature, we begin to understand and feel it. We become intrinsically closed within it and gradually begin to see its inner meaning, the program of development. We are included in this program, but do not want to match it. We want to do everything according to our egoistic program. And here, we are in conflict with nature. Question: if we, people, begin to draw closer to each other, what will humanity turn into? What transformation will happen? Answer: in order to get closer, we first need to rise above everyone's petty, personal egoism. We must belittle it, control it. Thus, we will rise to the level of controlling our human nature, we will rise above it. Through connecting together, we will create a system similar to nature on the inanimate, vegetative, and animate levels. And then, we will build a nature called Adam, man. This is a single system, like the inanimate, vegetative, and animate have a single mind, single feeling, and common properties that combine together, mutually complementing each other. Building this system, we will understand that there is a single mind in it, which we will perceive as being born precisely at the connection between us, the egoists. And so, we will begin to feel the higher management of nature, the upper world. From Cab TV's The Post-Coronavirus Era, April 2, 2020. Medium published my new article, The Search for Truth in a World of Lies. What we see is no longer what we get. An avalanche of unreliable and misleading information is spreading around the world at an alarming rate, particularly now, in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. Conspiracy theories and promotion of false vaccines for the virus proliferate worldwide, putting lives at risk, say international organizations. In truth, the false reality we now see is a reflection of the caliber of the chain of human connections we have forged between us, of our human relations. We can invert this worrying situation by fostering trust and credibility within society by changing how we relate to one another. This web of lies is the product of deliberate manipulation originating from within political parties and camps, big business, and high-power decision-makers that is cunningly injected into daily publications. U.S. President Donald Trump recently signed an executive order targeting social media companies in order to defend free speech from one of the gravest dangers it has faced in American history. The action was taken after Twitter marked two of his as potentially misleading. What is judged as trustworthy clearly depends on the eyes of the beholder. Social media has largely replaced the traditional media outlets as the main information provider. But credibility in the online environment is much more complicated and less straightforward than in traditional media. The United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, calls it information contamination, a problem hard to tackle since much of the misinformation is disseminated under the radar on social media platforms. It is almost impossible to obtain reliable, factual information. It is difficult to trust the media to act with integrity, fairness, and impartiality. There is almost always some exaggerated description, false information, misleading quotation, or opinion disguised as fact in an article. This web of lies is the product of deliberate manipulation originating from within political parties and camps, big business, and high-power decision-makers that is cunningly injected into daily publications. For this reason, confusion reigns in the world between facts and lies, what's credible or not. However, if we take a step back and put things into perspective, we will recognize that society is not a passive spectator in this spectacle of misleading reality. We are not accustomed to the truth, so we pleasantly buy into the lies, even enjoy them, and pay for them. Where there is demand, there is supply. Even if there were a truthful man, our false world would swiftly dismiss him. His truth would be interpreted as false. We cannot afford to continue to be the promulgators of division, allowing the egoistic nature that we have been feeding to drag us into each other's struggles. The time has come to deal with the actuality of our lives and understand that we need real communication, which will open up new, high-quality bonds that we desperately need to grow and spread widely. Such communication will not only be a source of reliable information, but an enterprise for social education, a tool and a means for ensuring regular and proper communication. In fact, what is needed is a new educational system for the whole society, children and adults, which would give us an accurate picture of where we stand, what needs to be fixed, and how to accomplish the task in order to enjoy a truly trustworthy world. When this awareness clarifies within us, we will be able to correctly filter the poisoned information and establish a brand new media, a media that puts human well-being first. This new media will be securely grounded in the fundamental laws of nature, the interconnected reality of the global and integral world, and will strive to maintain a balanced spirit in society and contribute solely to social union. A world in unity is a world of truth. Medium published my new article, How to Find the Joy in Simple Life. In simplicity lies the key to happiness. Thus, the change the world needs now is not only to get back to basics, but back to simple. If we could have a look at our planet from a higher perspective, like astronauts describe their view from space, we would realize with clarity how the Earth encompasses one humanity in a stunning and circular, yet simple way, without divisions. The coronavirus is leading us to a new dimension of existence. It has dramatically altered our routine and habits so we can look at ourselves from a different viewpoint, reconsider what is essential and what is superfluous. The virus cleans us of our complex and artificial life, our twisted and cumbersome life, and brings back the importance of family warmth, the thought of proper education and the simplicity we need. We begin life in a very simple way, close to nature. A man and a woman conceive, a baby is born and needs only basic food and care. Then, as the baby grows and develops, the demands for more possessions and attention grow, as well. In our prime, we chase money, diversions and amusements, and success in our careers. We squander our energy and end up feeling empty. As we age, we become drawn again toward simplicity. This is not necessarily just because our energy diminishes over the years, which is a physiological reality, but mainly because all the fancy and intricate trappings of the world we constructed no longer impress us. A person at this stage in life tends to realize that the simpler things are the most meaningful. Nature is this way also. Instead of complexity, nature is drawn toward simplicity. This is why we start life in a simple and natural way, and we also finish it in that same fashion. It seems that the more we develop as a society, as we become more evolved human beings, we reach a peak from which we, as a society, begin to crave for a simple but meaningful life. If we examine the culture we have created over the years, music, paintings, dance, all the human ways of expressing deep inner feelings and thoughts, we will see that everything that inspires us and that we admire is, at the end of the day, close to nature and relatively simple. This is the future of humanity. So after completing the current, complicated phase the world is going through, it will end and we will feel increasing attraction to a simpler life in which we will experience a myriad of flavors, the most important one being the flavor of love. Simplicity does not necessarily mean a meager life with nothing to do. Instead, it is a life in which we come to identify more closely with nature, so that we begin to feel the role we are born to fulfill, and what nature wants from us. Subconsciously, we all want to find the answer to this question, to discover the secret of life and its purpose. That is life's simplest question, and also the deepest. The coronavirus is accelerating an inner scrutiny within us. Under the pressure of nature, essential questions awaken. The virus cleans us of our complex and artificial life, our twisted and cumbersome life, and brings back the importance of family warmth, the thought of proper education and the simplicity we need. Life is short, and the lifestyle that has gripped us up to this point has left us no time to think about its purpose. The coronavirus gives us a chance. It invites us to think and understand how to truly live rather than to just exist and survive. How? By finding joy in the small but meaningful things in life. It is much simpler than it seems. Universal injection. Question: why does the coronavirus spread mainly to older people? Answer: in principle, the virus spreads to everyone. It is just that the young people tolerate it so easily that we do not even notice it. However, its next modification will be clearly evident on them as well. The fact is that the virus is carried by everyone, by both animals and us. There are people who experience the disease almost imperceptibly. There are those who feel a slight ailment in the form of chills or colds, and those who feel them more. And there are people who even die. As for children, the younger their age, the easier the virus is tolerated. However, it nevertheless affects them. In any case, it should affect everyone. As a result, you will not see a single person in the world that this virus has not passed through. Now is the time when we should get one universal injection. This is neither good nor bad, we just need to understand what nature demands of us. If we understand, then we will behave correctly and enjoy life. And we will not have any losses. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, April 12, 2020. Israel cannot be defeated by missiles. Comment: a forum in commemoration of 75 years of the liberation of Auschwitz was held not long ago. According to the statistics on the day that the forum was held, Israel curbed 800 cyber attacks on airports and on the airplanes of world leaders. My response: this is actually the war of the future. What's the use of killing people? It also costs much more money. A cyber attack, on the other hand, is done quietly, because all the world leaders come here and the goal is to eliminate them. This kind of cyber war takes place every day, but not at this rate and not so intensively, not everyone together. Comment: the hackers in different countries tried to disrupt the runway of as many as 60 planes at Ben Gurion Airport. My response: according to the wisdom of Kabbalah, humanity can replay its faith and annihilate itself in a thermonuclear war and then be reborn thousands of years later and grow, like in Chernobyl, and history will repeat itself but in a better way, because after such an event the mutations will be better. They will preserve all the problems of the past internally and will not repeat them anymore. Comment: this is a horrible script, of course, especially after Holocaust Remembrance Day. My response: but they will not repeat the problems of the past. Question: there are many important meetings all over the world that world leaders attend. Why is it possible to see this now so clearly by Israel? Answer: it is general love when world leaders come together and at the same time there are cyber attacks. Question: the outcome is a very romantic story. When all the world leaders come together, Israel reflects this attack. After all, it is Israel. So the attack must always be reflected. Does this mean that the hackers will never succeed? Answer: they will never succeed. Question: why is this related? Answer: it is because this nation, the nation of Israel, has a mission. It has a mission in this world. It is a mission that the whole world needs, and so nothing will happen to Israel. This is the reason that it is the safest place on earth. No matter which place in the world you visit, you may always think, it is safe here. Well, but, whereas in Israel, Although it is not safe, and not so easy to live in, nothing will happen. They need to find out through all their attempts that they will never succeed in any way, and ask themselves why they don't succeed. Then they need to look for an answer. But if they don't find an answer, they should get an answer which seemingly doesn't make sense from a Kabbalist and accept it. Question: what changes need to take place so that humanity will reach that? Answer: this also depends on the nation of Israel and whether it will be able to explain this to everyone in the world, who it is, what it is, and what it exists for. Question: and how can the nation of Israel want to do that? Answer: it needs to listen to what the wisdom of Kabbalah says. All the people in the world need to know what the world exists for what purpose, and what each of the created beings must do in order to bring the world to the optimal state. Question: and what law do they need to implement once they are all under the hat of Israel? Which laws do people need to keep between them? Answer: absolute, complete, mutual participation, unity, closeness, and understanding of each other, as one single whole, when all of humanity is as one family, when everyone together are like one man, an absolute feeling of the other as yourself. It should be as a woman feels the baby in her womb. This is how each one needs to feel everyone else inside him. Question: will Israel be like a warm blanket? Answer: yes, a warm blanket that covers the whole world and everyone feels warm, good, and safe. From CabTV's News with Dr. Michael Leitman, January 28, 2020. Symphony for Zir and Pin and Malkhut. It is not possible, yet, to explain where Zir and Pin, Malkhut, and the other Sephirot are in the Ten. A Ten still does not feel this, does not have such abilities. To work with spiritual concepts, one must already incorporate the properties of bestowal and engage in the love of friends above one's desire to enjoy, above love for oneself. Thereby, we will acquire the properties of Zir and Pin and will be able to grow Malkhut, otherwise it is impossible. Therefore, all our work is to attract the upper light that will affect us. We must ask the Creator to shine the returning light on us, which will give us the quality of bestowal. To the extent that the upper light affects us, we will want to love our neighbor and to bestow to him. We only need to attract the light, and for this we need a common prayer. If together, as a ten, we demand and ask for the light to come, it will come and unite us into one body called Zir and Pin or Malkhut. Then we will understand connection and what Baal HaSulam writes about in his article The Study of the Ten Sephirot. Right now, we do not understand this, we only read Zir and Pin and Malkhut, but we do not have such workings in us and, therefore the text remains dead. These are simply lifeless letters to us. But after the correction, we will be able to read and perform these actions inside, in our feelings. This text will become for us like notes for a musician who can play them or even sing a melody by ear. After all, he feels these notes. If a person is not familiar with the notes, he does not understand how to sing and play them. He looks at musical notes and does not know what each note means. So we do not know what the structure of the upper worlds means. Until we acquire the qualities of bestowal, we will not be able to perform many of the actions described in the Kabbalistic book. From the Daily Kabbalah Lesson, March 30, 2020. Havaya, the structure of our desires. Question: what is Havaya? Answer: Havaya is the four-letter name of the Creator, Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, which includes all of creation. Everything that is created and exists in the world falls under the four stages of the cascading of the light, which are called Havaya or the names of the Creator. The upper light, while passing through these four stages and building the entire universe, highlights the essence of the Creator's attitude to creation. Question: if we take the matter of our world, for example, a table or a person, regardless of what it is, then the structure of any desire is Havaya. Answer, yes. We just do not see it, do not notice it, do not feel it. Whatever the world is, big, small, macro, micro, no matter how we look at it, you can always see Havaya in it. Remark, even in Kabbalah, the term Adam HaRishon is constantly used. My comment, the fact is that everything created in the universe, on the one hand, is called Havaya and, on the other hand, it is considered a structure called Adam. By Adam, we mean not a person in our world, but a system that includes everything. The Creator created creation in such a way that it ultimately comprehended Him, the Creator. Therefore, creation goes through developmental stages until it reaches the Adam stage from the word Adam Amin in Dome, similar to the Creator. And, therefore, everything created can be called Adam. In addition, Adam HaRishon is creation in its original form, which undergoes all kinds of transformations and comes to its final result. Question: what is the difference between Havaya and Adam HaRishon? Answer: Adam HaRishon consists of Havaya. But when we talk about Havaya and how this structure reacts to the Creator and wants to become like the Creator, we call it Adam. Question: that is, all of these things seem to be in potential form, and a person reveals them with his feelings just like DNA, in our world, contains all of the information for the development of the human body and the properties of a person's character? Answer, yes. And then it is revealed. Question, and what are the 10 Sephirot? Answer, the 10 Sephirot are the 10 parts of which any complete, corrected desire for bestowal is composed. Question, what is the difference between Havaya and the 10 Sephirot? Answer, it is the same thing. Although Havaya consists of 5 letters, 4 and the tip of the letter Yud, it is still 10 parts. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, June 17, 2019. Peaceful coexistence of love and hatred. Comment: in the spiritual world, not a single sensation disappears. On the contrary, the two opposite feelings of love and hatred are always together. My response: they mutually complement each other, and therefore, they do not disappear. Comment: and in our world, we are always in one state, either love or hatred. My response: of course, because if they are together, they annihilate and mutually exclude each other. Question: how can love and hatred mutually coexist in the spiritual world? Answer: it is very simple. There is hatred for my original desire to enjoy myself, and love for the fact that now I myself want to bestow to someone. The fact is that the spiritual kli, vessel, is built on the desire, restriction, and formation of the screen, that is, the intention not for your own sake but for the fulfillment of the one you love. A vessel consists of all 5 stages, which must be one organism, and therefore, it can feel absolute, infinite, limitless, constantly increasing pleasure. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, June 10, 2019. New Life 1206. Jewish Self-Hatred.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Yael Shadarel. Hello. And today we'd like to talk about auto-antisemitism, or self-hating Jews. This is a phenomenon where Jews hate the Jewish people, hate Israelis, hate Judaism as a whole. This is what we'd like to talk about today. Be with us, Yael, please. Yeah, in recent years, we have witnessed a phenomenon where Jews and Israelis harshly criticize, even in a hostile way, the Jewish Jewish people, the state of Israel, and along with it, they feel that they're doing something very positive. The way they see it, they're a part of the Jewish people. They want to stay a part of the Jewish people. They're no less Israeli or Jewish because of it. But they do feel that the path that we have taken is wrong. And they're willing to take action. Actions that, in the eyes of others, seem as actions of hate, hostile actions, but in their opinion, they have actually come to correct injustice and the values of the Jewish people and of Judaism as a whole. And this is the phenomenon that we'd like to talk about today. And I'd like to read a definition that I've found on the internet about auto-antisemitism. Jewish self-hate is a social psychological phenomenon where a person of Jewish descent shows obsessive hostile behavior toward the Jewish people, towards the people of Israel, much like the anti-Semites themselves. What are the characteristics of this kind of anti-Semitism? This stems from within the people of Israel themselves. Where did this special people come from? We'll learn about this from the Torah. That, first of all, humanity developed, reaching a state where about 3,500 years ago, it started feeling in ancient Babylon, where actually was the center of humanity, where there were many nations, but they lived calmly, peacefully, and suddenly their pride grew. Their ego, they start asking, what are we living for? What's the meaning of this all? Why is one or another person greater than others? And so on. And among them, there was a very educated person, their priest. His name was Terach, Abraham's father. And he understood that there's a certain problem here. What do? People believed in little idols that they used to buy from him. And Abraham, who grew up with this father and in this kind of family, also took care of the people of the nation. He was like, let's call him a spiritual leader of those Babylonians. It was a pretty developed civilization. They had plenty and abundance, more or less. And they lived a pretty good life until their ego started developing. It's a process where the egoistic desire grows in everyone. And then begins competition, and they started feeling that they can no longer get along with each other. And this is how it was among everyone. In a relatively small way compared with what we have today, it's a very small and primitive kind of ego. But Abraham understood that this is something that comes from the law of nature, that man's ego, his desire to feel greater, superior, to enjoy life, to be superior to others, something that didn't exist before. Before that, they lived like in a village. You know, everything's open. No one closed anything. Everything's common. Who wants this? Who wants that? Because the simple ego feels no need for separation. But suddenly they started feeling, this mine, this his. Don't take mine. I won't take yours. And they started building different borders, boundaries, these kinds of relations between them. If you don't give me, I won't give you, and so on. And Abraham, who researched it all, he understood that it's probably the law of nature that this is how it works on a society that grew up, that is more mature, that is more developed, like with a child that grows up. And he understood that nature that is developing this egoistic law, that the ego is constantly growing between people, it's growing in order to allow people to actually connect above the ego. Because in the oppositeness between the ego and what's above it, in the oppositeness between these two forces, can they understand the laws of nature, the two forces that act in nature, the separating and the connecting forces? And the depth is between them. Yes, the special state is between these two. And he started explaining this to people. And a special group was formed that in the future will be called Israel. What do we want to understand from here? But first of all, there are people from those ancient Babylonians that start feeling both the egoistic force and also the opposite force, the altruistic force, the force of connection that connects them. And people that have these two forces are called Jews, because by nature, they are directed towards connection, unity, and the rest of the people that did not receive the drive for connection, the desire for it, are called the nations of the world. And what force do they have? Only the simple egoistic force, and also not that big. The altruistic force that grows in a person also demands or needs the increasing of the egoistic force. And so what we have is a group that includes both forces of nature, the positive and as if the negative. And this group is developed. And there is a group that is less developed, because it doesn't need to develop that much in its egoistic force, because what they have is enough for them in order to live their life. And they have no need to develop the altruistic force. They have just one force. Yeah. And so we see that in that part of humanity called the people of Israel that have these two forces, first of all, they're very opposed to one another, in contradiction with one another and with themselves, because they all have these two opposite forces in them. These are people that can't that easily get along neither with themselves nor with others, because they're in conflict. They're in an inner struggle between them. And this is what we're witnessing to this day in every Jew, that they consist of the Gentile and the Jewish part in them, and therefore they're in inner restlessness. And this is the answer to what you have asked, where are there Jews that hate themselves? In each and every Jew there is a force that hates himself, because in him there is an egoistic, very big egoistic part of the will to receive in him. And if he does not balance himself out with the altruistic force, then of course he has self-hate. And he'd be more than happy to stop being a part of the Jewish people and to be a part of the nations of the world. And to this day we see how much the Jews want to run away and hide among the nations of the world. That auto anti-Semite, he first of all has to be a Jew with these two forces, right? That this is where the entire contradiction and the ability to hate himself is formed. But what does he hate? Himself, the people of his nation, Judaism. What exactly? He hates the second force, the other force that has transcended his ego, the force that is the opposite of the ego, the altruistic force. He hates it. So a Jew who has these two forces has this constant inner struggle between the altruistic and the egoistic forces. But he's not really aware of it. Yeah, some kind of inner changes, kind of instability, let's call it. And that person that has these two forces actually is unaware of it. He'll say that he's doing whatever he's doing, all of his criticism against Judaism and the state of Israel and everything is out of goodwill to make a change. It doesn't matter how that person justifies himself. We're talking about this is how it is by nature, and this is what controls them. I understand that this is not a new phenomenon. Of course, it's been going on for thousands of years since then, since the Jewish people was established. It exists since then. Still, what's special about the way in which auto-anti-Semitism is expressed in our time? It's actually like in any other period, that if there's an opportunity to be a Jew in this world and to benefit from it, then he does it and he uses it. If not, he doesn't. But it's not a Jew, because a Jew is he who develops the quality of bestowal and love of others. What the Torah demands of us, love another as yourself. Love covers all crimes. That the force of good that we receive is in order for us to rise above the force of evil, the egoistic force that exists in each of us. If so, then this way we also don't hate the evil force, the egoistic force in us, but we understand that because it exists in us, we have also received the opposite, the other, altruistic force, where we can crown one over the other, and that the control of the good force over the bad force will actually bring us to a special degree where the bad force will join the good force, and by these two forces, we will do good unto each other. And eventually, in between these two forces, will we start researching, acknowledging, understanding, perceiving nature, that these two forces come to us from nature, the positive and negative forces. And by that, we can come to know the uniqueness of nature, that eventually the attainment of the unity in nature, which consists of the good and the bad, this is our goal, to be adhered to the source, the absolute source from where these two forces come from. About auto-anti-Semitism. The word anti-Semitism, this we understand. We're familiar with it. It's where non-Jewish people hate Jewish people because they're Jewish, because they're Jews. And throughout history, we saw many expressions of it. Relatively familiar. Auto-antisemitism is a concept that kind of confuses me. If I look at different periods in history, I see that Jews from different factions used to look at other Jews and used to develop some kind of very strong criticism against them that eventually could turn into hate. For example, when the immigration to Israel began, there was a new concept formed. The old Jews and the new Jews. The pioneers came and they said, we don't want to be Jews like we were in exile. There, that was the old Jew. Those were religious Jews, they had their way of life, and here we came here to build a new country for ourselves, and they built the motive of the new Jew. A few decades later, today, in the society that we live in, if I'll ask around, how does one or another sector relate to the other sectors or denominations? Or, for example, what do Jews that immigrated from Russia think about Orthodox Jews and vice versa? Or how do Tel Avivians feel about the settlers in Judea and Samaria? And we can find such examples everywhere. Very strong criticism about those Jews. And at some point where this criticism becomes deep enough, it turns into hate. And I think that this is the true danger that the Israeli society is in. The level to which we hate each other because of this and because of that. And now, going back to my question, because this is something that we're all familiar with. Now, when we're talking about auto-antisemitism, who are you to say that my criticism against you is auto-antisemitism? Your criticism against me is auto-antisemitism. How do we transcend disputes between sectors? Because disputes are actually a very good thing. Without that, the Jewish people would not develop. But how do we work with all of this? First of all, it is clear to us that all of us are torn into two, each of us, because in each of us there are these two forms of nature, two opposite forms, the will to receive and the will to bestow, the altruistic and the egoistic forces, meaning, like all other people, we are egoists, and in addition to that, we have some kind of an altruistic beginning that doesn't exist in anyone else. And this split that exists in each of us, this is the root of why do we look at life, at the world, in one way or another. We're not like ordinary people. We always have a thing, and it's opposite. And so we have self-hate, caring for others and hating others, and different such things. That Jews, they're always restless, always searching, because they don't understand themselves. They all the time want to correct the world, and so on. We saw it during the revolution in Russia. What happened? Jews did it. If you're going to research that, you'll see that everywhere you have a Jew who led a bigger or smaller department or group, and behind him you had the masses, the Gentiles. And this is how it is with everything. And today too, no matter how you put it, were humanity to develop without Jews that opened all of the new options for development, out of the dualism of their nature, the force of reception and bestowal, and that they're all the time restless in between these two. Without that, humanity would have not developed at all. Then everyone would have been on the animate level, meeting their basic needs, like back then, without any development. We have to understand that Babylon gave the development to the entire human species to become like the upper force, like the creator that exists between the two opposite forces of nature, the positive and the negative. Otherwise, we would have just been in this one negative force, and that's that. We would have lived in caves, and that's how it is to this day. In your opinion, what's the difference between legit criticism? I'm a Jew, you're a Jew, we have different opinions, and that's fine. And hate, which is not legit. We can't. If I'm talking about these two approaches to life, the force of reception and the force of bestowal, egoistic and altruistic, these two forces, these two inclinations, they're opposite forces, and therefore, every Jew is in this inner kind of split. And if he does not reach the wisdom of Kabbalah, which is the method of how to balance these two forces and how to benefit from them, how to advance by myself and with all of humanity together, then it's a destructive force. We see that all the bad things in the world actually developed out of these two unbalanced forces. What do you do? Until we'll show the world that we, with our forces, where each of us is actually included of these two forces, that we can actually develop a correct attitude, approach to life and pass it on to the world, then both anti-Semitism from the nations of the world toward us and our inner anti-Semitism will not cease. The balance between these two opposite forces that tear every Jew apart. If he'll be able to be in balance with himself, and next to him there's another Jew who's also in balance with himself, and they have two different opinions, no problem. But still, if every Jew, which is such a complex creature, if he'll know how to be balanced with himself, his attitude toward another Jew will be legit. Criticism, constructive criticism, is hate a result of inner disbalance? Of course, but also his criticism towards others will be only in order to help the other to be balanced. How does that work? Because a Jew who is a correct Jew, and that's only someone who's engaged in the wisdom of Kabbalah, then what follows is that he balances himself by these two forces, negative and positive reception and bestowal, and also teaches others, giving them an example. And so his attitude towards others isn't that he criticizes them, but he tries to teach them, to give them an example, to help them to also ascend in order to connect these two opposite negative and positive forces that exist in each of them in order to connect with one another. Like we see electricity, for example. Between the plus and the minus, you have to have some kind of resistor between these two forces so they won't short-circuit. And this way, you can use the opposite forces in nature in a good way toward the same goal. The goal being to receive a good result in the resistor that's between them. And the resistor is something that we ourselves have to arrange. Will a person feel more complete? Because right now I understand that he feels split on the inside. A person can correctly use himself only on condition that he understands that his purpose is to reach love of others. What's the connection? How does that calm the inner frictions inside himself? Because this way, I pass all of my forces onto love of others. I don't want anything for myself but the ability to do good to others that are outside of me. How does it affect these two forces? I use them to the fullest. So my altruistic force of connection is supposed to overcome the other egoistic force in me? That's the goal? Yeah? That's the balance? And the egoistic force, will it remain in me? Of course, nothing disappears. Only they're in balance with one another. The minus and the plus. And then both the minus and the plus work in a good way in order to achieve the common goal, which is achieving connection and unity among everyone. We talked about auto-antisemitism. Now I want to ask about anti-Semitism. If the Jewish people does not do what we just talked about, meaning that they do not use their uniqueness in order to balance these two forces of plus and minus that exist in their nature to the benefit of the world, that only they know how to do it, and to cause the entire world to participate in the correct balance between the plus and the minus, that the nations of the world subconsciously do want to yield to the nation of Israel and do this. Were we to know how to do this, and we'd want to, and we would do it, then the entire world would have been together with us. We would have all together served this condition of the balance between these two opposite forces of plus and minus that exist in nature, and we would have made it big time. What comes first, anti-Semitism or auto-anti-Semitism? Auto-anti-Semitism, this quality exists in everyone because a person feels the contradiction between himself and the rest of the nations. It exists inside of him. Even where there are no other nations, he'd still hate the Jew inside himself versus the Gentile. And both of them exist together and grow together. And this is how it is and will be until we will learn how to correctly balance this work inside us, to bring all of us to love. Dr. Leitman, thank you very much. Thank you, Yael. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.
Reach the level of the director of the World Theater. There is a theater in front of us in which we all play. Imagine that we have to decode the first level that we are in today, what happens in the first act, and what do the characters do in it. We understand that people around us are puppets and we do not want to take part in this show, not as extras and not as leading actors. We want to reach the level of the screenwriter because he conceived the scene, or at least the level of the director. If we reach the scriptwriter's level through the level of the stage director, we will decode why the creator has created everything the way it is, why this act is managed the way it is, what connects the characters and the actors, and why one act follows another in a certain sequence. Then we will be worthy of ascending to the next level. On the next level, everything will be totally different, but the plan is the same. We will re-enter a certain world in which different forces operate, different heroes are present, a completely different situation exists, and nothing will resemble what preceded it. What we see today in this world will not reappear again anywhere, just as it will not reappear on any level in the future, because on each level everything is totally new. Thus gradually and consistently we will attain and adapt to all of the 125 spiritual levels. We will become acquainted with the thought of creation of the Creator, and we will partially discover His revelations, manifestations, and transformations until we attain the last level, His complete plan. Him. Moving up the spiritual level symbolizes the gradual attainment of the Creator as the director, the scriptwriter, and the producer of the whole universe, who performs all the actions while everything else cannot move or do anything, on the inside or the outside, since only He moves and operates every atom, every molecule, every thought, and every desire, and arranges everything in its place. The Creator or the Light is a positive force field. With this force, He operates the global theatrical production for the purpose of actually raising us to the level of His attainment and, through this attainment, to resemble Him. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, January 5, 2020.